and welcome. This is Trials and Tribulations. I'm Phil Airy, and I've got my two cohorts.
Sarah Owen Hughes.
And me, Faith Douglas.
My beautiful stage that's part of my own house and part of Faith's house is Jason Daff, who is representing the Chartered Institute of Horticulture and the University of York. Jason is the Horticulture Technical Manager at the University. He's responsible for ensuring that the University's plant and crop systems are working and use sound horticultural practice. He uses controlled environment growing facilities, so that's top of the range glasshouse facilities that can manipulate air temperature, light spectrum and carbon dioxide levels to help scientists understand how plants grow and can be manipulated. He's also the Honorary Secretary for the Chartered Institute of Horticulture, which gathers together professionals from all aspects of the industry. And members of the Chartered Institute are working for free at the advice stand all the way through this weekend. So if you have any gardening questions, they are more than happy to help out. So can we have a very warm welcome, please, to Jason Daff?
Thank you very much, Sarah.
That was quite a good intro, wasn't it?
I loved it. I wrote it myself.
It's almost as if you'd written it yourself. I love it. So, Jason, we've known each other for, what, 2-3 years now, is it?
Possibly four,
is it really? Gosh. So we met at the University of York, didn't we, where we interviewed for the same job.
I didn't think you were going to start on that sort of cliffhanger, Sarah, to be fair.
Well, yeah, it was you were absolutely the best person for that role. But explain to anybody who doesn't know, what do you do? What is a technical manager?
So really, at the University of York, we have quite a broad portfolio of plant science research. We're involved in sort of fundamental plant science, picking apart how plants grow and develop, all the way through to sort of applied field trial science, trying to improve crop productivity, reduce inputs, and these types of things. And all of that work requires support from a dedicated team of horticulturalists who service the needs of the scientists by providing really high quality growing environments, looking after and tending the plants on a daily basis, watering, scouting for pests and diseases, these types of things, and providing critical advice on how to set up and perform plant science experiments.
Yeah, so you're very much the engine room, aren't you? Because quite often you'll get a researcher who comes in with an idea, but they don't know if it's going to work. But you can say,
absolutely,
either that's not going to work or it will work better if you do this.
We try and apply some sort of common sense check, make sure that things are grounded in really sound horticulture, so that we're not torturing plants to get the results that we might want.
Yes. Because you grow some very unusual things, don't you?
Absolutely. Some of it is quite routine, so we grow a lot of Arabidopsis. This is sort of the lab rat of plant science. It's grown all over the world, and it makes up a fair proportion of our work.
It's a field cress, isn't it?
It is. It's a field cress. It's a member of the Brassicaceae, the cabbage family. It grows wild in the UK. But it's a very small plant, it's got a very small genome, and we've sequenced the entirety of that genome, and we know an awful amount about Arabidopsis. But, it's not representative of crops that we grow, those agroeconomic important crops, things like wheat and barley, oilseed rape, rice, that's a big one that we grow at the University.
I know, which we don't really have a lot of paddy fields in the UK, but we have an awful lot of rice research, don't we?
A surprising amount from a country that doesn't grow any rice commercially.
Yeah. But that's I presume, because we then don't have any pests and diseases that could affect it, so we can control it in a lab, can't
Absolutely.
We?
Absolutely, but we've also got a huge amount of expertise in adjacent fields that sort of complements that rice research. So if you want to do high throughput sequencing, genomics, transcriptomics, these types of real fundamental science, then it makes sense to do that here and grow the plants here as well.
And I know that at York you do some fantastic things with land remediation, with soil remediation, where you grow miscanthus, which is a grass, and rice sometimes, to extract chemicals out of the soil.
It's probably one of the most exciting areas of research is using plants to remediate mining waste, explosives, things from artillery ranges, these types of things.
Wow.
So we've found bacteria that can degrade things like TNT and other explosives that can then be incorporated into plants to use them to make the land safe and usable again.
And you can then extract those components from the plant when you harvest it as well, can't you? So you can actually clean up the soil and then reuse or reappropriate the heavy metals.
Things like nickel, gold, and other heavy metals. Wow. There's evidence that that could be a viable solution in the future.
So what you're saying is we could grow fast-growing grasses to mine gold and nickel and heavy metals out of the soil rather than digging holes?
Possibly.
That's unbelievable. That's my mind blown already, and it's the first talk of the day. That's amazing. So obviously you're heading up that team. You've got a team. Is it five?
There's seven of us in total.
Seven of you in the glasshouses, and it's quite a small glasshouse complex, but a lot of growing cabinets.
Yeah, it's
not just growing rooms on several floors.
It's not extensive, but it's quite intensive what we do have.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
Some of it is very tightly controlled. Cabinets, so small 1 meter square growing areas where we can control temperature to within a half a degree of whatever the set point is,
yeah.
Relative humidity to within a percentage point, and we can manipulate light intensity, light spectrum and day length. So really eliminate all of those variables just to make sure that what we are investigating is the only thing we're investigating, and removing as much of that background noise as possible.
Absolutely fantastic. It's really fascinating work. And it's, like you say, it's very highly intense as well. You know, you have that small area, but you have a lot of different crops and lots of different demands on the crops from all your different researchers.
Yeah, all of them are slightly different. They've got slightly different focuses. And, you know, being horticulturalists, it's really good for us to be generalists in that we can understand a little bit about all of those projects. But use that sound horticultural principles to support that work.
Yeah, absolutely, absolutely. So how did you get into this role? Because again, you know, when people talk about horticulturists, you know, you think of gardeners, you think of landscaping, you think about doing a bit of garden maintenance here and there. How did you end up in the pathway that you went down?
Well, going back to, you know, early childhood, I suppose it started with you know, my grandparents were gardeners, you know, vegetable gardeners especially, and that's sort of sparked an interest in how to, you know, grow vegetables, but not for any sort of aesthetic or you know, even taste. It was more of the process of learning to grow something, learn to grow it better, optimize it. And I think that's sort of what appeals to me. I'm not a collector of plants, you know, I'm more interested in the process of growing them, you know, as best as I can. And that sort of panned out into doing a little bit of exhibition vegetable growing. I've had a growing giant vegetables and things in the past. All these obscure, obsessive things,
which
I think sort of leads to an interest. So after I finished my A-levels, I went and studied for a degree in horticulture at Pershore College down in Worcestershire.
Yeah.
And obviously there's a lot of science in that course. I did a dissertation, which was very science heavy. And I thought, I quite enjoy this as a sort of day-to-day activity that I could be involved in. So when I left there, I went and I was lucky enough to get a job with Syngenta, which is one of the sort of major agrochemical companies in the world. And I worked there for 7 years working on herbicide research. And that's when I first started growing weeds professionally. So
they're actually really hard to grow, are weeds. I used to have a collection of pots with different weeds in for a weed ident test, because I thought, at least I know where they are, I don't have to go and find them. And I could never keep them alive because I cared for them too much.
Well, weeds have evolved strategies to avoid being...
in pots.
Yeah. You know, the worst thing they ever could do would become domesticated, you know, and be our pets. So, you know, they really want to avoid that. But I was growing weeds for herbicide testing for rice and sugarcane and soybeans, as well as all of the crops that we grow in the UK. So I did a little bit of travelling, South Africa and places, collecting, you know, wild weed populations to then cultivate back in the UK for the research.
Amazing, yeah. Amazing. So you then ended up working, you were the head of the glasshouses at Cambridge.
I went to the Sainsbury Laboratory at the University of Cambridge.
Wow.
And I had 5 years down there. Again, a similar role to York, you know, high-end science, but more fundamental plant science, looking at Arabidopsis mainly.
Yeah.
So, you know, the move to York has meant I'm growing a more diverse range of plants these days, which is ultimately more interesting for us as horticulturalists.
I do remember, though, the first time I met you, you went, they've got rice here as well. Because it's quite hard to grow.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, in the summertime, you know, when you're in a greenhouse and it's 35 degrees, you know, and you're a chap of ample proportions like I am, you know, I mean, you don't want to spend a lot of time in there in the middle of the day.
We both work in commercial glasshouses now, don't we? And I have the same challenges. It's like, why do you want to get to work for 5 a.m? Because I need to finish by 2 because it's too hot. And, you know, it can be really cold outside and it's... Yeah. Vague, blistering.
It's beautiful in the wintertime.
Yeah. It's lovely. Oh, you go to work wearing a T-shirt. I mean, what a privilege that is.
And under all those artificial lights as well, we never sort of suffer from seasonal affective disorder or anything
like that.
No,
absolutely not. Although sometimes the LED lights can play with your eyes if you're tired. When you then go do some microscopy later, it can be quite challenging.
Yeah, I mean, we're still under a lot of sodium at York, it's not the most efficient lighting system, but it's warming.
So what element of your job, because obviously you're very pragmatic and practical, what element of your job do you really love the most? What bit makes you think that's worth going in for every day?
Horticulture, you know, presents us with different challenges every day. You know, you're working with biological organisms, which, you know, aren't cooperative all the time. You know, they like to throw up a problem for you every now and again. And it's all of that problem solving, which keeps the interest, keeps you stimulated, gives you cause to go out and research and learn something and then come back and apply it. And, you know, I can't think of a more stimulating job than doing what we do, really.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's, every day is different because the plants haven't yet read any of the textbooks. And they certainly haven't read the labels that you get in the shops either. Do you? You know, you sort of go, oh, well, that won't grow here, but nobody's told the plant that. And it's amazing seeing how they operate.
Well, the pests and the diseases definitely haven't either.
The pests and diseases have definitely not read the label. That's absolutely true. So you became a member of the Chartered Institute of Horticulture when you were in the south.
Yes.
You've been a member for quite a few years, haven't you?
Yeah, I mean, I first joined after I competed in the Young Horticulturalist of the Year competition when I was a student. And that's sort of where my interest started. And I'm still very, very proud to, you know, keep involved in that competition where I can now.
Yeah, absolutely.
Because it's such a great introduction for young people to celebrate the talent that we have in our industry and offer them the opportunity to, you know, to go out somewhere, you know, with a £2,500 travel bursary, travel the world, see new sights, make a lot of memories.
And make a lot of friends as well,
absolutely.
Lots of connections. So Callan Stewart, who's on the advice stand today, Callan was one of my students, and he must have competed for 5 or 6 years. And each time he won a certain amount of money at each heat. So he made money every year. He won some books, he won some garden tools. And every competition, he's there with 6, 7, 8 other people from other colleges or botanic gardens or independents who'd come through the heat, and he met them and made connections with them. And when he walked in this morning, the first person he saw was Faith from the Arboretum, and said, oh, I met you at the Arboretum.
Absolutely.
4 years ago. And she said, I remember you. And they follow each other online, and that's how you build up
those
network.
Those connections you make as a student are really important, you know, further down the line, because it is such a small world as well.
Yes, and it's open to people of what age?
Up to 30.
Up to 30. So you could, in theory, you could apply and take part from the age of 16 all the way up to 30 and do it every single year.
Yeah, absolutely.
And build up your confidence and your experience and knowledge, which is phenomenal.
Absolutely. It's, you know, we're about to hold the national final at the University of Warwick in May, first weekend in May.
Yeah.
And that will be the, you know, the culmination of this year's competition.
Yes.
But we'll launch it again at the end of the year for people to get involved for the 2023 competition.
Yeah, so the local heats are normally January, February aren't they? And then the regionals are a bit later, sort of March, April.
Yeah.
And then you
final
have the final
in
May. And it's always in an amazing garden, amazing setting somewhere, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, last year we went up to Logan Botanic Garden up on the west coast in Scotland.
We had it here 2 years ago.
We did, absolutely.
Yeah, actually just before lockdown, that was the last one before lockdown was here.
So, you know, you get to some fantastic places and meet some fantastic people.
Absolutely fantastic. And again, it's such a great way of supporting the youth in horticulture and so they know there's an association there who's there to look after them.
Absolutely. You know, and we're grateful to all of the people that sponsor that competition. You know, there are so many tremendous national and regional sponsors, not least the Percy Frower Trust, who sponsor that travel bursary of £2,500.
And the flower show here sponsor part of it as well, so the North of England Horticultural Society.
Absolutely. And the colleges, Stockbridge Technology Centre as well in the North of England.
Yeah.
Lots of garden centres regionally as well. Sponsor the competition.
Oh, it's fantastic. And it's all run by volunteers because it's all horticulturists who are members of the CIOH.
Absolutely.
Who make the questions up, who invigilate, who are question masters.
And they do it because they love doing it. They love supporting that those young people and that talent.
Absolutely. Yeah. So that leads on to my next question, which is, you know, why is it so important to have an institution like the CIOH? Why is it important to be a member of a group like that as a horticulturist?
Well, you know, as a horticulturalist, you know, we know the value of horticulture, we know the value of what we do, the impact that the crops and the spaces that we maintain and design have on human health and well-being. And being part of a learned society or professional organisation like ours really, you know, helps galvanise and cement that feeling so that we can promote the profession of horticulture to the public and that we can increase the professionalism of those working in horticulture.
Yeah.
So a big part of membership is having your skills and experience assessed to be eligible for membership. So it's a way of confirming that you've reached a certain point in your career, that you're worthy for membership. And it also shows your commitment to continuing professional development. Every day is a school day in horticulture, and we learn a lot from each other, from talking and visiting different places. And this is just a way of formalising that intention as well.
Yeah, and this year's the first year I've not volunteered on the advice stand because I'm doing this, but what I've loved about it is obviously I'm with my peers, with interesting people from different elements of horticulture.
Absolutely.
So there's, you know, glasshouse growers and chemists and arborists.
It's really that full gamut of horticulture. Growers, gardeners, journalists, researchers, teachers.
Perfect.
Anybody involved in an allied horticultural profession can be eligible for membership.
Absolutely.
And I might visit a garden or a nursery, and I might pick up something that they're doing that then I can apply back in my own establishment.
And I've used the flower shows and the advice stand as my CPD, my continual professional development, for years, because it's a really good barometer. And I remember Graham Porter, who's on the stand today, Graham and I were talking to somebody about chafer grubs in their lawn in Wetherby, and then somebody else came up and somebody else came up, and we realised that this was actually a notifiable problem, and we notified DEFRA and said this is a problem. They located it to some brand new turf that had been laid at the local golf club, and the chafer grubs had just annihilated. We'd never seen anything like it. This guy showed us a video of a square of his lawn that he could just lift up.
Really?
And he counted over 100 of these chafer grubs in an area of 30 square centimetres. Yeah. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it can be a good barometer of what the pests and
problems are this year. It's a fantastic barometer, because I could then go back
year.
And tell my 200 students that year, this is something to watch out for, this is a pest and disease that's a problem this year, and we could then give advice. And you know, we know when there's, you know, peach aphid or what have you, or a wilt on something, we know to tell people about it. And, you know, we speak to Hilary from the Northern Fruit Group, and we all share that advice.
Absolutely.
Which is fantastic. So what, going forward, what would you like to see of the Chartered Institute? How would you like to reach out to the next generation who are coming through?
Well, we've just made a big commitment towards our student members. We're, you know, very proud to offer free membership to all students of horticulture, whether they're full-time, part-time, FE, HE apprentices. You can get the value of membership of a society like ours for free for the duration of your studies.
That's amazing.
So come along, you know, and like all of these things, you get out of it what you put into it.
Yeah.
You know, if you want to turn up to visits, seminars, lectures, if you want to network with people, there are people there that will give you their experience.
And you have lectures on YouTube, don't you, as
well? Yeah, we've done a lot of online webinars over the pandemic, and they're all freely available on the CIH website if anybody wants to have a look. You know, they're fairly accessible lectures, up to about 40 minutes to an hour,
yeah,
a broad range of topics.
The Commonwealth War Graves one was unbelievable.
Yeah.
I had no idea they had that breadth of diversity of plant life and management issues
800,
around the globe.
800 horticultural staff across the globe.
Unbelievable. Again, you know, it showed me a side of horticulture I'd not even considered, which was fantastic.
No, I would have no idea how to manage a tropical lawn.
No.
You know,
no.
Incredible.
No. I struggle with my own, if I'm totally honest. Jason, that has been absolutely brilliant. Thank you so much for being our first speaker of the day. If anybody is around during the day and you have any questions about anything horticultural, or if you just want to know where the ice creams are or where your husband's gone, the Chartered Institute of Horticulture have got the advice stand just over in the far corner. Enjoy the rest of your show, and thank you so much for coming on board.
Thank you very much.
Well, that's it. Thanks for listening. that's been another edition of Trials and Tribulations. Now, if you liked it, please subscribe and follow. But until next time, keep it green.